Chris asked suddenly. Yes, Chris? Do you think I'd make a good cop?
Oh, you'd make a great cop. Why?
I think that's what I want to be, Chris said.
Oh, like a trooper or a ranger?
Maybe. Or maybe in New York City.
Well, it's good to have goals, Chris. It's good to have goals.
Under heaven and earth, there are more things.
Okay, Boy Scout, you're up, Ryan Cotter said, pointing at the campsite fire pit. Keaton didn't much care for his tone.
What, you can't build a fire? He asked back, putting a hint of disbelief into his own voice.
Mariah was saying what an outdoor Eagle Scout you were. Here's your chance to impress us, Ryan said back, leaning forward aggressively.
Keaton didn't know Cotter much at all. He knew that the UVM sophomore had taken a predatory interest in Keaton's friend, Mariah Washall, and invited her and her roommate Rachel, along with Cotter's own roommate Gary, on a hike of Mount Abraham in the Green Mountains. Mariah had in turn invited Keaton, probably because she didn't want to go without a male ally. It had sounded like a lighthearted outing, but the tension had started from the moment of introduction and escalated to disagreeable long before they summited. Now, a mile down the long trail, they were at the battle shelter for the night and Ryan was upping his dominance games.
Oh? We must have a major understanding, Ryan. I'm not here to impress you. I'm here to keep them safe, Keaton said, waving at the two girls watching worriedly.
This is it. He's gonna swing at me, Keaton thought. The other kid was a bit taller but thinner. Keaton wasn't super worried. Cotter's eyes widened incredulously, then he laughed. It was a real laugh, right to his core, but it wasn't a friendly laugh.
You're gonna protect them, Cotter asked. Who's gonna protect you, Boy Sprout?
Ryan, stop it, Mariah said, looking upset. Keaton came so nobody would get the wrong idea. Also, he grew up around here and knows these trails.
Ryan looked at her, eyes narrowed, then glanced at Rachel. His face relaxed.
Just messin', babe,
he said, then turned to look at Keaton.
Wow us, Bear Grylls.
The uneasy feeling Keaton had when Mariah first proposed the trip was now an all-stations five-alarm bell ringing in his head. He was doubly glad he'd stopped home for an extra piece of gear from his parents' house, glad his father trusted him with the combo to the safe. Misgivings aside, he set about making a fire while the others watched. Gathering the thin, wispy, dead limbs from the lower branches of three separate pine trees, Keaton bundled them into a twisted bird's nest-looking bundle and set them in the fire ring. Then he spent a few minutes gathering some larger deadfall that was bone dry and easily broken into forearm-length chunks. Last, from his cargo pants pocket, he pulled a piece of curled white birch bark he'd found on the trail and plucked his bushcraft blade from its sheath.
That's your knife? Ryan asked in disbelief. That's barely a pencil sharpener.
It was actually a full 4-inch blade in a drop point style, but Ryan looked like a Rambo survival knife type. Ignoring the comment, Keaton opened the birch bark so it was flat on one of the fireplace rocks and set the edge of his knife perpendicular to the bark. Then he scraped back and forth until he had a nice little pile of bark dust and shavings. The loop on the side of his knife sheath yielded his ferrocerium fire rod, and with just 3 scrapes of the back edge of his blade, he showered enough sparks to light the pile of shavings. Lifting the now flaming sheet of bark, he set it under the bundle of pine twigs until the nest of mini branches caught on its own. Flames licked up and started to hungrily consume the twigs. Layering larger and larger pieces of deadfall on the bundle created a teepee-shaped fire whose warmth brought the two girls closer, hands out.
Now we just need to gather some bigger wood, he said, sitting back on his heels as he resheathed his knife and fire rod.
Ryan stood, leaning against the side of the shelter's 3-walled platform, arms crossed, a frown on his face.
Correction, now you gather wood. We're gonna set up the bed zone, right, Gary?
He said with a sideways leer at the girls. His creepy buddy just nodded, not having said more than 10 words the whole day.
"We've got plenty of wood," Ryan said, getting a laugh from his pal.
"I'll go with you," Mariah said to Keaton.
"I'm gonna get the food going," Rachel said.
"You sure?" her roommate asked.
"Yeah, I'm fine,"
Rachel said, already reaching into a pack for food. Keaton went to his own pack and disconnected the day pack portion, swinging it onto his back with a thump.
"Okay, it's getting dark. Let's gather what we can while we can still see," he said to Mariah.
They headed into the woods, immediately finding that most of the easy deadwood of the forest had already been cleaned out by waves of previous campers. They were at least 300 yards from camp before they found a fallen spruce tree whose dead length had broken into several 6- and 8-foot sections.
"Perfect. Let's drag as much of this as we can," he said to Mariah.
"Keaton, I'm really sorry about this trip. Ryan was always much nicer in the dorm, but now he's acting like a real jerk."
"Which is why I'm here," he said.
"And why I'm really glad you're here. We'll get through the night and then get back tomorrow. Can we go back now? I don't like leaving Rachel alone."
He nodded, handing her the ends of 2 good pieces to drag, then hefted the longer, heavier bottom third of the small tree up over his own shoulder, along with a 4-foot section of dead birch he had found crushed under the spruce. His day pack got snarled a bit, and he had to sort it out, but no way was he going to leave it behind in camp with an asshat like Cotter. If anything, he was even more glad now of its contents. Ryan and Gary were inside the shelter, setting out their sleeping pads and bags, and Rachel had steaks grilling on the fire and potatoes and aluminum foil in the coals. With only a one-night stay, the group had splurged on impractical but very appetizing food for their only dinner.
"Just knock the horns off mine and wipe its butt," Ryan commented from the shelter, smirking at Keaton in a nasty way.
Mariah turned toward Keaton with her back to Ryan and rolled her eyes. Breaking up the birch, he left it near the fire, then worked on the spruce to do the same, only stacking it further from the food. Evergreens and cooking meat were not the best combination, but the birch would get them through the short amount of cooking they were going to do.
"That smells amazing," Mariah said to her roommate.
"So do you, hot stuff,"
Ryan added from 30 feet away. "Kid had ears like a hawk," Keaton mused. Even Buddy Gary was starting to look a bit uncomfortable with the aggressive vibe Ryan was throwing out.
"Won't these steaks draw bears?" Mariah asked.
"Very possible," Keaton said with a shrug. "No bear will dare come anywhere near this camp," Ryan interjected, coming out of the shelter.
He looked angry, like the idea was an affront to his manliness or something.
"Look, the moon's coming up,"
Rachel said in a completely obvious attempt at redirecting the conversation. Somehow it worked because Ryan's head snapped around to look up at the big yellow orb just barely visible above the eastern tree line.
"That'll help us see, right?"
Mariah asked quietly, speaking to Keaton.
"Some of us can see just fine,"
Ryan answered her, his gaze hungry. Again, Keaton was forced to be a little impressed by the kid's hearing. He was certain that he couldn't have heard that if their positions had been reversed. Ryan was looking back up at the moon, and his breathing was visible. The cooling air showed clouds of breathy exhales rising over his head. Suddenly, Keaton's bad feelings coalesced into an outlandish idea. A crazy idea that he should have put out of his mind instantly, but the thought had already taken root in his psyche. Like an invasive weed. He pulled his day pack off and turned around, walking slowly around the back of the shelter. Once he was behind the log structure, which was like a big 3-sided lean-to, he yanked open his pack, pulled out the Hill People chest pack and snugged into it, then yanked out his packable Patagonia jacket to put over the whole thing. He felt a little better, but not fully, as his idea was still eating at his self-confidence. He came back around the shelter only to find Ryan leaning against one wall, waiting for him.
"Cuffing the carrots, Scout? Snapping off a quick one? Maybe I'll let you watch later," he said with a wink.
"What the fuck does that mean, Ryan?"
Mariah said, 10 feet behind the lanky kid,
Rachel stood near her, looking anxious, but Mariah just looked angry.
What do you think it means, Cupcake? Did you think Gary and I were coming all the way out here to sing you Kumbaya?
Ryan said, turning to confront her. His voice seemed deeper. Keaton's idea was even more solid now. Ryan was a few inches taller, but not any heavier, yet his mouth was writing checks that it didn't seem likely his body could back up. And he was both overly aggressive and very confident, standing with his back to an enemy who he knew had a knife, almost like he felt invulnerable. Then there was the whole hearing thing. Keaton patted the chest pack and its contents, then reached under his shirt for his St. Christopher's medal. The chain and medallion were both silver. Taking off the necklace, he pulled his knife from its sheath. Ryan stiffened, tilting his head.
"Pulling a blade, Scout?"
he asked, voice almost a growl, but he didn't look around. With hands that were starting to shake, Keaton held the chain over one of the back logs of the shelter and started chopping it with his knife. Adrenaline poured into his bloodstream, almost destroying his small motor control. It took two chops to get through his confirmation gift.
"What the fuck are you doing?"
Ryan growled, now facing him, eyes fixed on the silver chain. Keaton ignored him, picking up a quarter inch of silver chain with his left hand while his right dropped the knife and yanked open the back compartment of his chest pack. The grip of the Smith & Wesson 329 PD filled his hand, and he yanked his dad's Big Woods walking revolver out. He didn't try to open the cylinder, instead just tilted the gun up and fumbled the bit of chain into the opening of the big 44 cal muzzle, then raised the shaking gun with both hands to cover the now wide-eyed Ryan.
"You dare?"
the other boy yelled, his expression part anger and part worry. His brown eyes were clearly turning yellowish in the fading light. Then suddenly the kid was gone, just a fast, dark blur running into the woods.
"What the hell, you brought a gun?" Rachel asked, shocked. "You pulled a gun on him?"
Keaton ignored her, focused on chopping the rest of the silver necklace into pieces. Pulling a speed loader of 6.44 cal magnum hollow points from his chest pack, he started to cram the chain bits into the big hollow noses of the cartridges, wedging them into place with his knife.
"Is that silver?" Mariah asked, voice shaky.
"Yes, he's out there somewhere. Changing," Keaton said, opening the revolver's cylinder and dumping the existing rounds into his hand, then shoved them into his pants pocket. He pushed the speed loader into the empty chambers and twisted the release knob, dropping the modified rounds into place. Then he clicked the cylinder shut and moved out by the fire.
"Are you a fucking maniac? A damned gun nut?" Rachel asked. "You're fucking crazy."
She bent down to grab a stick from the piled wood, and a massive, dark furred shape leapt right through the space she had just been standing in. The beast missed her completely, slamming instead into Gary, who had been standing with a shocked expression. Keaton heard bone break, and the downed boy started to yell in pain. The four-footed monster turned toward the two girls and Keaton just as Keaton pulled the trigger on the Smith & Wesson. The gun roared, and the werewolf roared back in pain and anger. Giant legs contracted and sprang before Keaton could get another shot off, the werewolf disappearing into the dark. Keaton spent 10 full seconds turning in place to study the ominous dark, a small but powerful light from his pocket lighting what the bright moon didn't. Gary continued to yell, and now both girls were crying, huddled together by the fire.
"We need to get him into the shelter," Keaton said. Neither girl moved.
"Now!"
he finally yelled, fear reducing his patience to nothing. Mariah let go of her roommate and moved to Gary, grabbing him under the arms. He proved too heavy, but her sobbing friend came to her rescue, grabbing an arm and pulling harshly toward the shelter. Gary screamed from the manhandling, then suddenly went quiet and limp, the pain finally knocking him out. The girls got him into the log shelter and Keaton backed into the space, light and gun pointed out at the night.
"Cover him with a sleeping bag. He'll be shocky when he wakes up," he said, eyes and ears on the deadly woods.
"He's a fucking werewolf," Rachel said.
Mariah, seemingly calmer than her roommate, looked at Keaton with understanding dawning on her face.
He said he wanted to show us something this weekend. We thought he meant the view. He's been different the last few weeks, more sarcastic, quick to get angry, and really aggressive.
Probably new to being aware, Keaton said, still watching outside. The whole world was new to werewolves, their reality, along with vampires, still a shock that society was trying to adjust to. Something smashed the back of the shelter where the roof sloped down to its lowest point. The plywood roof split under incredible force, and one massive paw was briefly visible. Rachel screamed and bolted toward the front, slamming into Keaton as he turned toward the noise. Knocked off balance, he couldn't get a shot off, instead falling onto his side, gun hand trapped by his own body. Something bigger than a paw hit the broken spot, smashing an opening that let Keaton see a massive yellow eye as he fought to get to his feet. A huge, toothy snout broke through, and Keaton kicked at it with his booted foot while trying to get his gun hand out from under himself. The head snapped at his foot, biting and yanking on it before it disappeared back out of the shelter. Seconds later, there was a strike on the roof a few inches to the side of the broken hole. Keaton got to his feet, backing toward the front.
"Rachel!" Mariah yelled, running after her roommate who was now outside the shelter. She too clipped Keaton, this time knocking him out the front of the open shelter.
He instinctively backrolled to his feet, still somehow holding the gun, but missing the flashlight. Inside the shelter, snarls and roars sounded as the werewolf struggled to get free from the broken wood. Keaton turned and ran after the girls. Rachel was running down the long trail in complete panic, Mariah behind her and Keaton last, looking over his shoulder as he went. There was no sound but their panting breaths and pounding feet. The full moon lit the dark, muddy path just enough that they didn't fall, and its silver light let Keaton see a bit of the forest around them. Behind them, a deep, cruel howl sounded through the night. They all ran faster. Keaton thought they might have been running for 3 or 4 minutes when suddenly a voice spoke from the shadows.
"Over here," a male said.
"Follow us," another voice said, this one female. Two tall strangers beckoned them and Rachel veered off the trail right to them.
"We've got a camp over here, you'll be safe," the young woman said.
Mariah was now with Rachel and Keaton had no choice but to follow, his gun down by his side. Their two saviors moved smoothly through the woods, having no issues despite the lack of a trail. Up ahead, Keaton could see the glow of firelight, and in less than a minute, they were stepping out of the woods and into a campsite filled with people. At least 8 or maybe 10 people sat or lay around a big burning fire. They looked underdressed for the woods, in jeans and t-shirts or even less. Spring in northern Vermont isn't super warm, and with a clear sky overhead, the night was cold enough to see breath. Yet some of the guys were only wearing sweatpants or gym shorts, and only one of the three girls he could see was wearing a coat. All eyes were on them as the group shifted around a bit, and then a really, really big dude stood up. He was actually huge, not just tall, but heavily built. Had to be 6'6" and well over 250 pounds of muscle and black beard.
"This all of them?"
the giant asked the girl.
"There's one left up at the shelter," she said.
Keaton got his first good look at her in the firelight. Tall and very pretty, long brown hair and deep brown eyes, lots of skin showing, as she was wearing just a sports bra and workout shorts. What was with these people?
"There's a werewolf up there," he said. "We all gotta get the hell out of here."
Nobody batted an eye.
"Yeah, the howl kind of gave it away,"
another kid said. He, at least, was wearing hiking pants and an L.L. Bean jacket. The young girl next to him was wearing almost identical clothes, and it struck him that they looked alike.
"That the cannon we heard going off?"
the jacket wearer asked. Keaton started to lift his magnum, but suddenly the underdressed brunette had his wrist in a firm grip, keeping the gun pointed at the ground. He tried to pull free, but somehow she held him without even a struggle.
"Easy there, buddy. Just don't want any misunderstandings now, do we?"
she asked with a smile.
"Oh, you're wounded?"
"What?" Keaton looked where she was looking and saw blood on the ankle of his right pant leg.
"It might be Ryan's. I got one shot into him," Keaton said.
You know that even that cannon won't do much, right? Unless you're packing silver rounds, the kid in the bean jacket said.
Keaton chopped up his necklace and put it into his bullet things, Mariah said. Why aren't you people freaking out? There's a real, honest-to-God maniac werewolf out there probably eating his roommate.
The people in the group all exchanged glances, and Keaton realized they were roughly the same age as him and the girls. You're safe here, the giant said, his voice deep. I'm Delwood. That's my sister, Clary. The other one who brought you in is Matthew. The outdoor gear fashionistas over there are Mac and his sister, Jetta. I'll introduce the others in a bit. Right now, they're gonna go look for your wolf and his friend. Go.
It was a command, and the remaining people in the group just took off into the woods like they'd been shot from a cannon. The underdressed sister, Clary, was crouched down, inspecting Keaton's leg.
No, you got bit,
she said, shaking her head and looking back at her brother.
What? I don't even feel anything,
Keaton said, kneeling down and poking at the bloody spot. A sharp pain shot up his leg.
Ow, shit.
Just a little one, barely bleeding, she said, watching him closely. Keaton realized she was holding his gun, somehow having taken it right out of his hand, and he hadn't noticed.
But if I'm bleeding, I'm infected, right?
He asked, the truth suddenly hitting him.
Maybe. Hard to tell,
Delwood rumbled. Clary leaned down and sniffed his wound.
No, you're infected, she said. How can you tell? I mean, who can tell by sniffing?
Oh, shit, Keaton said.
What? Mariah and Rachel asked in unison.
They're werewolves too, he said.
Some of us, Delwood said, completely casual. Others are more like werewolf hunters.
His eyes turned toward the only two jacket wearers in the group.
Reformed werewolf hunters, Mac said. Ladies, please come over by the fire. You must be cold. Not everyone has the metabolism of a shrew.
Mariah looked at her roommate, then turned to Keaton. He looked at the scary Delwood, then at the really attractive girl smiling at him holding his gun. He shrugged.
Nothing to do about it if they decide to eat us, he said, not really afraid anymore.
Hey, hey, nobody's getting eaten around here, the girl Jetta said.
Not without consent, at least, Delwood said, then laughed at his own joke.
Jetta rolled her eyes at the giant, then came forward and grabbed Rachel by the hand and Mariah by her sleeve.
Come on over here. My brother, at least, won't bite, and whoever that rogue ware is, he can't get past Delwood or Clary.
Or my sister's Glock, Mac said, rummaging in a huge cooler for bottles of water, which he handed to the girls.
Keaton found himself gently guided to the fire by Clary, who gave him an encouraging smile every time he looked her way.
Here, have a seat on the log and I'll look at your bite,
the underdressed werewolf girl said.
Why are you guys out here? Keaton asked.
Full moon, Mac said.
But you and your sister aren't wares?
He asked the other boy.
We just really like the woods, Mac said.
But you're out here with werewolves? Mariah asked.
We're with them at the dorms, too. Frankly, I think it's much easier out here where they can change and run after deer and stuff, Mac said.
You chopped up a necklace and made silver ammo? He asked, turning to Keaton.
We didn't know he was a werewolf and he got really aggressive. Basically, he threatened to rape the girls, Keaton said.
What? Clary asked, sitting back on her heels, expression outraged.
He's not the same kid I met in the dorm, Mariah said.
Wait, you guys live in the dorms? At UVM?
Separate facility downtown, but we take courses at UVM and Champlain College, Jetta said.
Suddenly a howl rose up in the distance, followed immediately by a half dozen others, the last just outside their camp.
They found him? Mac asked Delwood. Yeah, Curtis was the first call. The others are driving him this way,
the giant said, head tilted as he listened.
There is one.
One right out there, Rachel said, voice quivering.
That's Matthew. He refuses to leave the area, not really trusting the singer kids to keep his sweetie safe, Max said, chuckling with a glance at his sister.
As if I need to be kept safe, she said with a snort, smacking her brother on the arm.
As true as that is, he can't really help himself, Jetta, Clary said. His wolf won't let him leave you alone, especially with a rogue male on the loose.
The howls came again, closer and changing pitch through an incredible range of sounds that all made Keaton's neck hair stand up.
Okay, they're almost here, Delwood said, standing up.
Keaton stole a look at his revolver, still in Clary's hand.
I'd give it back, but I don't want any of our pack to get shot, she said apologetically.
Plus, dude, it's kind of redundant with us here, Max said, pulling a black pistol from under his coat. His sister already had a small gun in her right hand.
Those don't look big enough, Rachel said. For most people they aren't, but Mac and Jetta usually shoot things through the eye socket, so, well, no real need for a cannon,
Clary said matter-of-factly. Keaton found that really hard to believe.
Through the eye? Come on, nobody was that good of a shot.
You said I was infected,
Keaton said to Clary, who, like her brother, was staring at the woods in the direction the howls had come from.
Definitely,
she replied.
So I'll become a werewolf?
She exchanged a glance with her brother.
It's a strong possibility.
What if I chopped off my leg, below the knee? He asked. She turned to him, horrified.
Wow, that's commitment, Delwood said. I like this kid.
It won't help, Clary said, flicking a glare at her brother. It's already in your bloodstream, already all through your body. LV is really aggressive.
Howls sounded again so close that Mariah gasped and Rachel gave a little shriek.
Easy, girls, Max said. You're safe, he said, moving between them and the howls.
The two girls held hands, staring at the woods, both literally shaking, and Keaton felt like he should be doing something to help. He stood up and instantly felt a warm hand on his arm.
Just hang easy, Keaton. We've got this. Just sit back and watch, Clary said.
He was suddenly aware of her body heat, her lightly clothed body just inches from his side. He felt a wave of discomfort all over his body at the same time. Then he felt everything. The fire's heat on his back, the wind from his left, Clary's warmth on his right. He smelled the wood smoke and the woods, Clary's skin, his own blood. It suddenly sounded like a herd of elephants were crashing through the woods, headed right for them, and his vision sort of zoomed out into the forest, penetrating moon-cast shadows. Breath huffed in the night, a panting sound, and then he saw the beast, its yellow eyes spotting him as he spotted it. It leapt, clearing 20 feet, hit the ground, already bunching up for the next leap, eyes fixed on Keaton. A dark missile hit it from the side, a furry blur as big as it was, knocking it sideways and down. The flattened werewolf was light brown, same color as Ryan's hair, the other werewolf darker. The attacking wolf had Ryan's throat in his jaws and all four legs braced as it stood over the downed wolf, growling murder.
Submit, rogue,
Delwood said, striding up the two like they were puppies playing. The wolf that Keaton was sure was Ryan whimpered.
Let him up, Matt,
Delwood said, eyes on Ryan. Matt let go and stepped back. Instantly, Ryan twisted around to get his feet under him and leaped straight at Delwood. The huge kid slapped Ryan's wolf head hard with a blurring left swing, somehow stepping sideways at the same time. Then his right hand was snaking under the wolf's throat, and he was slipping around behind the wolf, climbing its back and clamping his legs around its middle. Keaton had seen something like that in MMA fights, but never between a huge man and a giant beast. Massive arms tightened around the thick, furred throat as even bigger legs scissored the werewolf's middle.
And it's Singer with the rear naked choke, Mac narrated like it was Monday Night Fights.
Cabled arms flexed, barely moving as the wolf went apeshit. Something like 10 or 20 seconds went by and the wolf's struggles slowed. Keaton became aware that massive wolves were all around them, and that the wolf that had pinned Ryan first was now just on Clary's other side. Just in front of Jetta, who watched the fight like she might be tested on it, one hand on her hip and the other hanging by her side,
pistol pointed at the ground. The wolf that was Ryan slumped, eyes closed, and the body relaxed. Delwood released it and untangled himself from it, climbing easily back to his feet.
"You have to hold the choke a lot longer with wares," he said, directing his words right at Keaton. "So you have to be sure if it's a ware or a human. Choke a human that long and he may die. Got it?"
Confused at the seeming lesson, Keaton just nodded. "Sure, anything you say, Mr. Chokes Werewolves with his bare hands."
"Don't worry, we practice this stuff all the time. We'll get you up to speed," Delwood said.
"Ah, Del, give him a break. He just got bit, let him process," Clary said, shifting even closer till her too hot skin was actually pressed against Keaton.
Delwood eyed his sister's movements, raising one eyebrow, then grinning.
"Just facing the inevitable, little sis."
On the ground, Ryan's paws twitched.
"Let's truss him up," Delwood said, looking back down. A muscular, naked guy stepped out of the woods to the left and walked unconcerned to a pack, bending down to dig through it.
The guy tossed a loop of wire at Delwood, then pulled gym shorts from the bag, which he proceeded to pull on. Suddenly, there were a whole bunch of naked guys and one naked girl all nonchalantly pulling on pants or shorts. Keaton didn't know where to look. It seemed like a real, real bad idea to offend anyone who could turn into a massive killing machine. He felt eyes on him and turned to see Clary smiling at him.
"We aren't modest," she said. "You'll get used to it." "What's going to happen to him?" Mariah asked, staring at the unconscious wolf.
"We're going to take him to the local pack alpha," Delwood said. "This really isn't our territory, although he lets us run around in it. We're all transplants going to school."
"What will he do?" Mariah pressed.
"Either straighten his shit out or put him down. Frankly, engineering a trip to rape the two of you doesn't speak well for his future. We don't put up with that shit," Delwood said. "He'll also want to know how the kid got bit. Hey, how's the other one?"
Another naked guy walked out of the woods, Gary hanging limp over his shoulder like a rolled up beach towel.
"Broken leg, keeps passing out."
"Put him over here, Brian. We'll splint that leg," Jetta said, rummaging in a pack and pulling out a first aid kit.
Keaton noticed the gun had disappeared. Brian set the unconscious kid down, not quite dropping him, but none too gentle. Then sauntering over to grab some clothes, deliberately passing close by Rachel and Mariah, who didn't seem to know where to look. Keaton moved over to watch Mac and Jetta prepare a splint for Gary's leg, both working with an efficiency that he admired.
"You really chopped up your necklace?" Mac asked.
"Only silver I had," Keaton said, reaching into his pocket for the last piece. His finger suddenly stung and he yanked it out like a hornet was in his pocket. "You'll need to be careful around silver now," Clary said, suddenly at his side. She offered him his revolver and he quickly pulled his finger from his mouth to put the gun away.
"That's a good sign, right?" Mac asked Clary, pointing at Keaton's finger.
"A very good sign," she said, with a smile for Keaton.
She turned and walked over to her brother. Keaton found himself admiring the view as she did.
"Why is it good?" he asked absently.
"Because the alternative is bad," Mac said cheerily.
"What?" Keaton asked, but Clary was suddenly by his side. "Come on, let's go pack up your camp," she said.
"Now? In the dark?"
Her brows rose just slightly, and she tilted her head, lips in a flat line.
"Oh, right, nothing to worry about. The werewolves are on my side," he said.
She smiled and grabbed his hand, pulling him inexorably toward the trail.
"Right, best go with the girl who can pluck your arms from their sockets without breaking a sweat," he thought. Yet somehow, in some half-crazy way, he wasn't afraid.
40 minutes later, they were back. Keaton noticed that Rachel and Mariah were asleep, curled up together on a blanket next to the fire. A few of the wolves, about 5, were missing, as were Gary and Ryan, who had been trussed up with silvery cable when Keaton left.
"You got grease on your mouth, champ?"
Mac said to Keaton, who instantly rubbed the back of his hand across his face.
Smells like steak, Matthew said from 20 feet away. Burnt steak.
They left the food when they ran. He got really hungry when he smelled it, Clary said with a huge smile, like he wasn't a burnt steak hog, but had done something really good.
Gave me some of it, too, she added, looking down at the pile of gear she was making on the ground, a little smile on her face.
Across the clearing, Delwood spun around, eyes wide, mouth dropping open.
And you ate it?
He asked, incredulous.
Is that surprising? Don't you like steak?
Keaton asked, totally confused.
Steak is great, she said, not looking up as she put a sleeping pad on the top of the pile.
Then she moved over to the fire and helped herself to a bottle of water from the cooler, throwing Keaton a second bottle. He wasn't expecting it, but somehow snatched it out of the air.
Thanks, he said, eyes on the massive Delwood, who was approaching like an avalanche.
The giant stopped in front of the smaller male, studying him as if he was just seeing him. Then he glanced back at his sister, who was watching with narrowed eyes. Then he shrugged.
Okay, then. I'll be keeping my eye on you. Keaton, was it?
Delwood said before turning and walking away.
What does that mean?
Keaton asked Mac as he settled on a log in a spot that just happened to be right next to Clary. Jetta was exchanging grins with Clary, but Mac stayed focused on him.
It means welcome to the pack. Your life just changed, Mac said, leaning back and propping his feet up on a log.
He shivered, zipping up his jacket. Keaton realized he wasn't wearing his, just wearing a t-shirt. But he wasn't cold. At all. Realization hit him and he turned to look next to him. Deep brown eyes met his and she gave him a nod and a smile. Holy shit. Life had changed. And finals weren't even here yet. Boredom killed the vampire. Oddly, when people live long past their expiration dates, centuries beyond normal lifespans, one of the biggest dangers is almost the same thing that they have to survive to get through their teen years. Boredom. The little bar in western Pennsylvania normally had much quieter Tuesday nights. It mostly just broke even for the overhead of having a single bartender and one waitress on duty, sometimes not even doing that. But this night was different. The four or five regulars had made phone calls when the celebrities showed up, bringing in 10 times more customers, all eager to see the fun.
We didn't have to do this, the tall, lanky kid said to his platinum blonde girlfriend.
Listen, punk, you only turned 21 once. A spiky-haired slip of a brunette answered instead.
But I don't even drink, Lydia,
the youth said, watching his girlfriend toss down a shot of Jack Daniels that had appeared unbidden in front of her. People, mostly men but a few women too, all over the bar were sending drinks to the famous group of heroes who had come to town for a demonic monster, but were now just celebrating a birthday. Well, sending them mostly to Stacia.
Not the point. It's the fact that you're legal, at least to be in a dive like this, that counts. Good thing you're already legal for other things, or Blondie here would be in jail, the little vampire said.
Yeah, like a jail could actually keep me, Stacia said with a snort.
Hey, that's heart playing, magic man. Come on, Declan, we're dancing.
She grabbed his hand and towed him to the tiny dance floor, spinning into a lithe dance move that did nothing to cool the ardor of her many fans around the pub. To his credit, the tall kid went with the flow of it, dancing to the best of his admittedly low ability, knowing that no one was going to be watching him anyway. Across the room, seated on the far side of the bar, 3 men in various states of inebriation watched the gorgeous blonde dancing with her gawky partner.
She's way, way, way too hot for that little shit, one of them said.
Like she'd ever go for you, Dave,
his friend laughed.
I'm way more man than that little kid,
Dave said, slurring a couple of words.
Dude, you forgetting what she is?
The third friend said. He was the least drunk of the three, and his expression was wary as he too watched the lithesome figure dance 50 feet away. He drained his beer and stood up.
I gotta drain the dragon.
Don't you idiots get into trouble while I'm gone.
Fuck you, Dave said, but his tone was mild and without malice. His eyes were still locked on the famous figure he had previously only seen on the internet, in magazines, and on television. The soberest one snorted and headed to the men's room.
I bet she'd forget about him quick if she got a load of me, Dave said.
You mean a load from you, the second said, laughing at his own joke.
Skinny kid is punk,
a new, deeper voice said from behind them. Both men turned and looked back, then up, and then up again. A massive figure stood there, the biggest man either had ever seen in person. He was mean-looking, heavily muscled, and scary as hell.
What?
The second one asked.
I am in agreement. Skinny kid is punk. You should punch him in face.
The huge man said with a heavy Russian accent. He held a beer pitcher in one hand and was drinking from it like it was a mug. In his huge fist, it actually looked like that's what it was.
Oh, we were just talking shit. You know, like she could do better,
the second one said with an uncertain glance at his buddy.
You are right,
the giant said.
You are much better for her than skinny punk. Go punch in face,
the giant said, clapping Dave on his shoulder and almost collapsing him off the chair. Bringing himself back upright, he looked shocked, but then nodded.
I am, aren't I?
Much. You are much more than little boy trying to dance,
the giant said with a nod toward the couple on the dance floor.
He's got no moves, Dave said.
I don't know, Dave. She seems pretty into him, the second said.
Bah, because she has not seen you, Dave,
the giant said, smiling. It was as if he was attempting reassurance, but it missed the mark. Both men were unsettled, but looking back at the lithesome girl on the dance floor, Dave came to a decision. He stood up, wobbled a bit, and headed for the dance floor. His partner hesitated, then quickly slid down from his own stool and followed. They were almost to the small open space when a hand clamped down on Dave's shoulder. He spun around and found himself face to face with his third buddy, newly back from the men's room.
What are you idiots doing? I'm going to punch that punk in the face and introduce myself to her,
Joe said, weaving a bit as he pointed at the platinum blonde.
Whoa, whoa, where did that stupid idea come from? The third guy asked.
The giant, Dave said. His partner nodded and turned to point behind them. The only guy in sight was an old man at the bar who likely topped out at 5'6 or 5'7. Dave and his buddy looked at each other and shrugged, then turned back to their smarter pal.
No, no, no. She's the white werewolf, right? The sober one asked. They both nodded.
She's supposed to go out with the dude the papers call the warlock, right? They nodded again.
She's dirty dancing with that guy like he's her boyfriend, right?
Both wobbly heads swiveled to look at the dancers, then came back to him.
I guess,
Dave admitted. His other buddy nodded.
So, did you maybe think that the skinny kid is the warlock?
Mr. Logical asked.
What?
Dave asked. 3 seconds later, the math worked itself out in his head.
Oh.
His partner in crime was already staring at the skinny dancer, his eyes wide.
So if he is the warlock, what do you geniuses think will happen if you try to punch him in the face?
He'll curse me and my dick will fall off? Dave asked.
If you're lucky.
Come on, you two, let's get away from temptation, the smart one said, leading his drunk buddies away. From the opposite side of the bar, deep in the shadows, Arkady, chief of Demidova Security, sighed to himself. So close. Oh well, adapt and carry on, he thought. New plan. Ghosting by the locals, moving in almost utter silence, he approached the bar, looming over it and getting the immediate attention of the bartender.
4 fingers of rum,
he said, tossing a $50 bill onto the bar top. Seconds later, he carried his rock glass, brimming with Bacardi, back around to the table claimed by his team. Lydia was out on the dance floor with Declan and Stacia, leaving the table empty. Chris and Tanya were back at the hotel with the twins, relaxing after the demonic exorcism that Chris had performed 3 hours earlier. Nika was out on a solo mission, or he wouldn't have even tried any of this. Settling in to the sturdiest of the chairs, he watched the dancers carefully. Timing was everything. At the appropriate moment, when both girls were turned away and Declan was watching Stacia, he dumped the glass of rum into the single pitcher of cola on the table. Then he leaned back and waited. Two songs later, Declan headed back to the table and collapsed into a chair. He gave the giant vampire security chief a nod and drained off the soda already in his glass. Then he refilled the glass from the plastic pitcher. Arkady smiled at him and raised his own beer pitcher in salute. Declan raised his glass and leaned forward to sip it, but suddenly had a lapful of blonde.
"Tired already?" Stacia asked with a smirk.
"Dehydrated. Plus, it's fun to watch," he said with a grin.
"Oh, that's how it is it? Oh, wait, that's Warren Zevon. Werewolves of London?"
his girlfriend said, hopping smoothly off his lap and dragging him back to the dance floor, soda still in hand. Lydia, coming off the dance floor, snagged his drink and took a sip as she headed for the table. Then she froze, her head coming up to look at the soda. Her eyes swiveled to the pitcher of cola, which she snagged in a blur. Sniffing its contents, she turned and leveled her green eyes on Arkady.
"Tell me he didn't drink any of that?"
"Boy is 21. Legal to drink."
"Boy is the most dangerous witch on the planet whose thoughts become reality. What damage could a drunk super witch do?" she asked.
"That would be fun to see,"
the giant said, not meeting her eyes.
"Fun? Arkady, how fun would it be if he decided to wonder whether your vampire insides looked like a regular human's? Regular witches have to chant or sing or say spells in special ways to get magic to work. He thinks about it and it happens. He doesn't drink because he's terrified of what he might do drunk. You think this was a good idea?"
"You are a baby, have not seen even one full century,"
he said, dismissing her comments.
"Oh, that's what this is? Mr. Alive for Centuries is bored? And you thought you'd mess with the birthday boy? The one we all worry will go off the deep end? How will your queen feel about that?"
"You squealed to her like snitch?"
he asked, his full attention now locked on the tiny vampire.
"About most stuff, never. About things that affect the mental security of Harry freaking Super Potter out there? You betcha. Senka too. This is really serious, Arkady."
"If he is so unstable that the drop of rum is doomsday, maybe he should be ended,"
Arkady said. Out on the dance floor, Stacia suddenly stopped dancing and spun around to stare at Arkady. Her eyes had gone completely yellow.
"Are you a complete moron? Oh, still trying to liven things up? Omega, please inform Tanya that her chief of security is precipitating an incident with the witch and the wolf," Lydia said.
"Bah, you have no honor,"
Arkady said, hissing at the smallest vampire in the coven. She didn't bat an eye.
"No, what I have is duty," she said, "and unlike you, I do it."
The giant pulled back as if slapped. Then he turned to look at the young couple on the dance floor. Stacia looked ready to fight, and Declan, who was looking around confused, was making the bar's lights flicker as he prepared for whatever had alarmed his girl. There was a sharp snapping sound, and Arkady vanished from sight, the pub's door slamming open by itself. Stacia moved over to Lydia, her young witch boyfriend following with a bewildered look on his face.
"What was that?" Stacia demanded.
"That was boredom," Lydia said, looking worried.
"It's the number one killer of old Darkin."
"What happened?" Declan asked. "Arkady is bored?"
"Living for hundreds of years is not as easy as it sounds. Year after year of doing the same thing wears away at the psyche. You ever wonder why there aren't any Darkin older than Senka?"
Lydia asked.
"I try not to think about Senka at all," the young witch said. "She scares me spitless."
Lydia looked at him like she was trying to decide if he was joking. Then she snorted.
"Anyone ever tell you you're one of a kind, kid?"
"Mostly they just want to know what kind I am," he said.
"What did he do?"
"He tried to stir up trouble," Lydia said.
"What might be mostly minor stuff in most situations, but maybe rather more drastic in this one."
Declan frowned before turning to Stacia to see if she was following the little vampire's cryptic words.
"He spiked your coke with rum," the blonde werewolf said.
"I would have tasted it and spit it out," Declan said with a shrug.
"Would you?"
Lydia asked, unconvinced. "Of course, I know what rum tastes like. I've tasted gin, vodka, whiskey, scotch, tequila," he said, shuddering at the last one, "and a bunch of other stuff, just so I knew what they tasted like."
"But you just turned 21 today," Lydia asked.
"Aunt Ash had me taste all the bar stuff at Rowan West a long time ago, said we needed to do away with the mystery. She even let me get a little drunk once, put me in a circle and blocked my access to magic. It was really scary. The room spun, I couldn't think straight, and had the worst headache the next day."
"And you never wanted to taste it again?"
Lydia asked, looking at him like he was an alien. "I don't think you realize how important control is to a witch. None of the witches at Arcane drink."
"Oh,"
Lydia said, expression changing to reflective. She tapped her bottom lip for a second.
"It's possible, I suppose, that I may have overreacted."
"What do you think? That I would drink a rum and coke without tasting it and get blotto?" "Oh, you did," he said, face flooding with realization. "You thought I'd lose control and, like, go crazy or something." He sat down in a chair, looking stunned. Lydia looked at Stacia, a really worried look on her face. Stacia was frowning at the little vampire, but turned her attention to her boyfriend.
"Would you be worried?" she asked him.
"What?"
"Would you be worried if a witch with your power got drunk?" Stacia asked him.
He frowned and opened his mouth to protest, but stopped and closed it.
"Wow, there should be smoke or something," Lydia said, looking at him closely, then raised a quick hand in apology. "Sorry, can't stop the snark sometimes."
"I get your points, but I would know that the witch in question wouldn't get drunk," he said.
"Nah, let's say he or she got drugged. Some tasteless ruffian or something," Stacia pressed.
"I would wrap her up in a circle till she sobered up," he said.
"What if she was too powerful to circle? Or maybe I should ask if your witch pack would be able to contain you if you got drugged?"
Stacia asked. "Oh, yeah," he said, face going pale. "Point."
"But I overreacted," Lydia said.
"One, Arcady shouldn't be trying shit like that with a teammate, and two, you didn't know Declan was prepared for something like rum," Stacia said. "New procedure," she said, turning to Declan. "You don't ever drink anything that you don't prepare or see get prepared, or, if in question, have me sniff."
"I will analyze all of your drinks ahead of time, Father," Omega said from Lydia's phone, which sat on the tabletop.
"So why did Arcady take off?" Stacia asked.
"I may have hit him a bit below the belt," Lydia said.
Declan looked shocked for a second, then grunted.
"Figuratively, I'm guessing." "Of course, numbskull, I may have implied that he wasn't fulfilling his duty to Tanya."
"Ouch," Stacia said. Declan was nodding, eyes wide. "What should we do?" he asked.
"You? Nothing. Me? I need to go find him, if I can," Lydia said, looking uncertain.
Declan coughed.
"What? You know where he is?" she asked, clearly in disbelief.
"Me? No. Omega, on the other hand," he trailed off.
"He's got drones on Arcady?" Lydia asked.
"No, but he can likely predict where he'll be," Declan said.
"There is a 93% chance that Arcady is patrolling a perimeter around the hotel where Tanya, Chris, and the twins are," Omega said.
"That makes sense. I kick him in his honor and duty and he heads out to make sure the queen is safe," Lydia said.
"Omega, you scare me sometimes. Mostly late in the day when I'm supposed to be sleeping. The rest of the time I'm too busy thanking the universe for you."
"As you say, Lydia, predicting Arcady's whereabouts is something you likely would have come up with, given time."
"Yeah, right. That's it exactly," the little vampire said, rolling her eyes. "You two stay here. I'm gonna find the big guy and have a chat."
The witch and the wolf glanced at each other and then looked back at her.
"Nah, we're done here. Getting a bit crowded."
15 minutes later, Lydia parked the rental car in the hotel lot.
You really think he's out there? She asked the other two as they all got out of the car. Declan squatted down and put his hand against the pavement of the parking lot. His eyes lost focus for a few seconds, then he nodded. He pointed diagonally at the building. He's on the other side of the hotel, standing motionless.
Okay, that's creepy. What, did the earthworms tell you that? Lydia asked, glancing at Stacia, who just shrugged.
It's kind of like what happens on ferry, just severely limited in distance, maybe a quarter mile or so, the young warlock answered.
And you've been able to do this how long?
Well, after we got back from ferry, I sort of experimented a bit. No biggie, he said.
Uh-huh, right. Well, you lovebirds head on in. I've got some chatting to do.
Lydia, I don't think Declan is mad or anything, but I am. Messing around like that could have gotten civilians hurt, damaged our goodwill, and any number of things, Stacia said.
Yes, I know. That's why, while I have to make an apology, I also have to remind him of all that.
She found him pretty close to where Declan had pointed, at the far corner of the hotel. He was standing, facing away from the hotel, which happened to be east.
Waiting for the rising sun?
She asked. He grunted, just slightly.
So the kid says he would have tasted the rum and spit it out. I might have overreacted. I'm sorry about that, she said.
Not so much, he said, still facing away.
Nah, the kid's tried a bunch of alcohol already. His aunt even let him get drunk once to show him how bad it was for him, Lydia said.
I did not know, he said.
Yeah, so no big deal.
No, I did not know,
he said, turning to her at last.
I thought he would drink and get drunk.
Oh, and you actually wanted a drunk super witch? She asked.
He turned back to the eastern sky, which was still the deep dark of full night. After a second, he spoke.
Da, seemed like fun, he said.
Really? Because it doesn't seem like fun to me. Hey, you helped train the kid, right? You don't think a drunk Declan would be an issue?
Always held back, he said.
You always held back?
No, skinny witch always held back. Never let go.
I always heard from Tanya and Chris that once you guys got him started, he was kind of a lot to handle, she asked.
Da,
he said.
Always wanted to see him let go a bit. That would be something to see.
Yeah, up until he dropped a building on you, burned you up in a fire tornado, or just flat out made the ground open up and swallow everything, she said.
He turned and met her eyes. After a second, he nodded.
Da,
he said, turning away.
Is it really that bad? She asked. I mean, you've got demon-hunting rookie cops, teenaged warlocks, werewolves everywhere, twin vampire babies, a world-dominating supercomputer, and alien enemies out the ass. Oh, and a beautiful telepath who can read you like a book. What more could you want?
Not bored with life. Just bored right now, he said with a shrug.
And that's worth winding the kid up and letting him spin through a whole town?
No. Was mistake.
Oh, so you're standing guard against the sun for what? Penance?
Am considering resignation, he said.
What? Because you tried to get the kid drunk?
Also tried to get men to punch him.
Wow, something about the kid really bothers you, huh?
Nah, just easy target. Men get stupid looking at the wolf girl, he said.
You can use her name, Stacia. And yes, stupid men are everywhere. That one would have been even less of an issue. Have you ever seen her deal with drunk assholes? Hilarious. That would have been entertaining. Hell, I might help you next time, she said.
No next time. Bad judgment. Might have ruined all of my queen's plans, he said.
Admittedly not your best idea, but I get to be the judge of your employability,
Tanya said, suddenly from out of the darkness. Both of them whirled around, finding their young boss standing only 20 feet away, blue eyes almost glowing.
My queen,
Arcady said, instantly dropping to one knee, head bowed.
I am,
she said with a nod.
Which means you must abide by my will, yes?
He looked up at her, trapped. After several long seconds, he nodded.
And my will is that you will continue to be my chief of security until such time as I say otherwise, Tanya said. Also, no more trying to slip anything into Declan's drinks or food, right?
He nodded again.
I do kinda like the idea of messing with her with drunk guys, though, Tanya said.
Was messing